Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, May 6. Hello again, Orion Samuelson in the driver's seat again today. Max Armstrong will be joining us a little bit later. And since it's Mother's Day, we are going to feature an interview that Max did with America's Farm Mom of the Year that was actually announced just yesterday. And then we're going to focus more on the South American weather situation with a gentleman who really knows that area, Dr. Michael Cordonier, who first went to Brazil 45 years ago, and found a wife in Brazil, and has been going back and forth a great deal, and probably has a pulse on what's happening in Brazil and South America better than anybody else I know. But before we do all that, let's look at Wall Street for a moment, if we could, because it was another quiet week from the standpoint of any major movements in the indexes, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ. Daily moves fairly small. And today, we saw the market open lower and trade lower much of the day, but by the end of the trading session, the stock market rebounded from those early losses to close higher as investors took a look at the jobs data today as less disappointing than first thought. The materials, the industrials, and discretionary shares were among the day's biggest gainers, with the S&P Materials Index up 0.8%. But let's look at that jobs report that sent the market lower during much of the day. The U.S. economy added the fewest number of jobs in 7 months in April. Americans dropped out of the labor force, both signs of weakness that left some economists anticipating only one interest rate hike from the Federal Reserve this year. Economists were expecting a job number for April at 202,000 new jobs. That number came in at 160,000. The construction employment barely rose. The retail sector actually shed jobs for the first time since December of 2014. So that means the job gains in April were the smallest since September and below the first quarter average job growth of 200,000. And adding to the soft tone of the report, employers added 19,000 fewer jobs in February and March than previously reported. So the slowdown in hiring today came against a backdrop of weak economic growth, quieter productivity, lower corporate profits, prompted some financial institutions, including the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and Barclays, to lower their interest rate hike expectations for this year to just one, from the anticipated two before the report. Chief economist at Barclays said, "We now only expect one rate hike in 2016 in September, as we believe it will take longer for policymakers to accumulate sufficient evidence that economic and labor market activity is rebounding after a soft start to the year." But some silver linings in the report: average hourly earnings and the average work week rising. Hourly earnings went up 8 cents, 0.3%, and that took the year-on-year increase to 2.5% from 2.3% in March. It's still below the 3% advance that economists say is needed for inflation to rise to the Fed's 2% target. The average work week increased to 34.5 hours, just a slight increase. It's up from 34.4 hours in March. So the biggest report of the week, I think, today, and by the end of the market trading session today, they had pretty much erased the negative of the report, and so we saw that higher close today. The oil situation continues to be an interesting one, and it does certainly play in the overall market. for the past year and a half. A chart of the number of U.S. oil rigs in operation, well, been on a death-defying ski slope. But now, companies think it may be time to get back on the chairlift. The U.S. rig count may finally be bottoming out as oil companies look for oil prices to rally just a bit more, a signal that the time has come to deploy more capital and get production moving again. The number of active oil rigs in the United States has fallen for 7 consecutive weeks as of data released today. Some believe the rig count, though, will start to increase as drillers plan to ramp up production if benchmark U.S. crude reaches the trigger level of $50 a barrel. Now let's take a look at what's coming up in the week ahead. There will be some important government reports, not big ones really, but we'll get data on job openings, on labor turnover, and wholesale inventories on Tuesday, the federal budget on Wednesday, import and export prices on Thursday, and producer prices, along with retail sales and consumer sentiment data, will be out on Friday. Job openings, as measured by the Labor Department, are expected to have decreased 33,000 in March. Federal Reserve Bank officials will be active on the speaking circuit. The Federal Reserve Bank president of Boston and some of the other federal banks will be on the road. Kansas City, for example, will be on the board. Now, let's look at some of the earnings reports that are due out next week. First of all, media company, theme park operator Walt Disney expected to post an increase in its second quarter revenue and profit. Drug maker Allergan expected to report first quarter profit and revenue below expectations on Tuesday. Electronic Arts will be reporting fourth quarter revenue. Chip maker NVIDIA Corporation, first quarter revenue on Thursday. And antivirus software maker Symantec Corporation expected to report a decline in fourth quarter revenue on Thursday. We're going to get a slew of department store reports this week. Department store operator Macy's kicks off the results of major U.S. department store chains on Wednesday. And also coming out this week will be JCPenney reporting on Friday. And then we hear from Nordstrom's, and we also hear from Kohl's Corporation and apparel retailer Ralph Lauren Corporation reporting. Teen retailers are having a difficult time in the clothing business. This week, Aeropostale declared bankruptcy. Couple of burger chains. U.S. burger chain operator Wendy's reporting this week on Wednesday. Burger chain Shake Shack expected to report first quarter sales slightly below estimates on Thursday. And then the largest U.S. milk processor, Dean Foods Company, expected to report on Tuesday. So it will be, Tyson Foods, the biggest U.S. meat processor, releases second quarter results on Monday. So going to be a busy week again on the earnings report scene as we continue to hear results from a lot of companies. Now, coming up, stay with us because before we look at markets and talk to Dr. Mike, Max Armstrong is going to introduce to us America's Farm Mom of the Year. When we continue on the market, sponsored by CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Continuing on the market, sponsored by the CME Group, Mother's Day weekend and the best opportunity to introduce America's Farm Mom of the Year, chosen just a couple of days ago in St. Louis. And Max Armstrong, you have the story.
The voting was completed this week, Orion, as folks voted for Farm Mom of America in that annual recognition program sponsored by Monsanto. And the choice that was made was to name as National Farm Mom Mary Courtney, a Kentucky farmer. She and her husband farm just a little bit east of Louisville, Kentucky, in Shelby County, Kentucky. And one interesting thing she pointed out to me when we visited a couple of weeks ago, she and her husband, didn't have much help getting started.
Well, my husband and I started from scratch, and that's probably a very key component of our farm because we both grew up in families that farmed, but we just had this drive to do it. And so we both had public jobs, and we said, you know, if we're going to do it, this is the time. And so with a newborn in tote, we started raising 27 acres of burley tobacco. Tobacco was a staple cash crop in Kentucky. Within a year, though, we realized if we were going to stay farmers, we had to diversify. So we started working with some adjoining farmers, and they helped us kind of custom raise some grain, and that also helped with crop rotation. And then we started out with just 45 acres, which is a very small piece of land to full-time farm on. So it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. An adjoining landowner said, I'm going to sell my 50 acres. We like what you all are doing. We want to offer it to you before we put it out on the market. We weren't ready to buy a piece of property, but we had to. We had to figure out how to work, make it work. And so we're nestled between Louisville and Lexington. And local foods made sense to us to bring that into our operation. And we realized that if we could meet the needs of the consumer, then that would in turn meet our needs and wants as farmers to be able to create this business, to be able to be here for the long haul. So at that time, we had a lot at risk, and we still do, but our vegetable operation has expanded, our grain operation has expanded, our tobacco has expanded, but it, at the same time regressed some. So and then we were able to bring in livestock to our operation. In the midst of this, so from 2008 to now, we have four children, and they are the reason we do what we do. They're the reason that we continue to expand, the reason that we want to continue finding more ways to diversify, to protect our farm. It's a lifestyle that we want them to learn the value of hard work and reward, the morals and values that we can help instill for them. It's a sense of stewardship for us to be able to make our work be a prosperity for other people. And so there's all kinds of reasons that we do what we do. And I think we're able to be successful because we had that drive of starting from scratch. Every year brings its own challenges, whether it's the markets, the weather, somebody not paying you and figuring out how to overcome that, whatever it may be. We just keep going, and it's because of that big why we're doing what we're doing. And we can accomplish what we want by helping others get what they want, and that's what kind of has been an underlying foundation for us.
I know you like to share the story of your farm, the agriculture story. What's your favorite way of doing that, where you feel like you really make a difference?
We bring people to the farm. We don't do it as part of agritourism. Necessarily as far as for the income, but my husband and I feel like it's very important to teach through experience. So towards the end of our produce season, we invite the public. Originally it started out just as our customers. Now we open it up to anybody and everybody. And you come to a working farm for a day. Do we have lush restroom facilities or, you know, the finest of this and that? No. But they get to come and really, they can pick vegetables at the end of their season. And we may watch a child think they don't like peppers, but then they take a bite of it. And before you know it, they're walking around and they've pulled up the bottom of their shirt and they're filling it up with peppers. It's just amazing to watch them learn and appreciate what we do on a daily basis. You know, one year we had a flat tire on our wagon that we were doing a hayride on, and we got a note about what an experience that was for a parent to watch their child learn about something happening when it's not planned and them figuring out what to do with it and realizing that farming is not easy and you have to be, you know, an engineer at heart and figure things out. So, but bringing people to our farm has been probably the most rewarding. We feel like we're truly changing lives that way. And it all comes back to the one-on-one conversations and the one-on-one personal attention that we can give those individuals when they're at our farm for our Touch the Dirt Day. That's what we call it, just to get people to realize the simplicity in raising food.
Mary Courtney, she and her husband started farming just 8 years ago in Shelby County, Kentucky. She's the National Farm Mom of the Year. And as you can hear there, Orion, she's not only passionate about the business of farming, but about telling the story. And I agree with her. That one-on-one contact is so effective. I think that's the way to win hearts and minds as you visit with consumers to explain what's going on in the farming enterprise. That's our report on the Farm Mom of the Year. Big O?
It is always a pleasure to have Dr. Michael Cordonnier join us here in the studio to talk markets. And incidentally, you can find him on the internet at soybeansandcorn.com, soybeansandcorn.com. Dr. Mike, welcome back. And have we ever seen a more unusual spring for South America?
Well, it's always glad to be here, Orion. But usually April, we're talking about U.S. crops, but we had big surprises in South America. First of all, very severe flooding in Argentina. Argentina had a record soybean crop on the way until April 1st. And basically, they had 3 weeks of constant rain, 100% relative humidity, high temperatures, 80, 85 degrees, and flooded a lot of fields. And a lot of fields that weren't flooded, the soybeans were severely impacted by very poor quality of the beans. And in fact, the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange just now estimated that about 780,000 hectares of soybeans were completely flooded out, and another 700,000 was impacted. Now, that's about 7% of the total production in Argentina. So now everybody's estimates are coming down in Argentina.
And then Brazil has just the opposite in weather.
Brazil was just too dry. The soybean crop ended up very disappointing in Brazil. Now it's just barely bigger than last year's soybean crop in Brazil. And now the dry weather is impacting the second crop of corn. And that is two-thirds of all of Brazil's corn. And as you know, Brazil is now a big corn exporter, our number one competitor for corn exports. So what happens to that second crop of corn is really important in Brazil. And it's getting smaller day by day.
So when the numbers on planting intentions came out here in March, everybody was shocked. The markets went down, but they've come back. Is it because of South America?
I think it's all because of South America. Now, the fundamentals are still kind of a negative for the market. We got a big supply, but everybody's worried about La Nina coming in this summer. Could impact our yields for the U.S. And the money flow just went to commodities. Commodities all of a sudden look a much better prospect than equities. So a lot of fund money came into the market.
So are you expecting a big surprise when we get the planted acreage report in June?
Well, I thought 93.6 million acres of corn was too high, but now I'm not so sure. We have about 1 or 2 million less acres of prevent plant. Now, the last 2 years have been very wet, so we had a lot of prevent plant. That's not the case this year. So there your pie got a little bit bigger by 1 or 2 million acres. So I would say corn acreage 93 to 93.6. And then my soybean area is 83 to 83.5. So those numbers looked big in March, but now they look pretty good.
So with the problems in South America and possible problems here always, what is happening to the stocks numbers coming down?
I think they will come down. Now, we're still going to have a comfortable supply, but there's one big change in soybeans. You know, the market keeps anticipating a record crop year after year out of South America. Well, now with the problems in Argentina and Brazil, the South America soybean crop this year is going to be smaller than last year. First time in like 4 years. And now the next crop in South America could be even smaller for soybeans because Brazilian farmers are going to plant more full season corn. Corn prices are really good in Brazil. Argentine farmers are going to plant more corn because the government policy change favors corn. So all of a sudden, we go from this record crop every year after year in South America. Now it's not a record anymore. So now all of a sudden, if we would have a short soybean crop in the United States, that comfortable supply is gone.
We tend to see concern about the transportation situation in Brazil and in Argentina. Is that improving? Is it getting better?
Brazil is slowly improving. They, of course, have a very, very bad economic situation right now, so things have kind of slowed down a little bit. But there's more soybeans moving north to these northern ARCA ports, and I think that's a big deal in Brazil. They're building new ports on the Amazon, deep water ports in the northeastern part of the state, northeastern part of the country. So there's more and more beans moving north. And I would say within 10 years, half of all of Brazil's soybeans will go out in northern ports instead of southeastern Brazil, you know, Paranaguá and Santos. So that's sort of a big deal. Now, it should go, it should have gone faster, but the economic situation has sort of slowed down the progress.
I had one listener email me asking, will the Panama Canal addition widening have an impact on our exports from the U.S.?
I think so, sure, absolutely. Yes, there's going to be more volume going through there. In fact, that was part of the impetus behind these ports in the northern part of Brazil, on the Amazon and northeastern Brazil. You know, you cut off like 3,000 kilometers. And yes, that will have a big impact, I think, on shipping through the Panama area.
And we can't talk grain or soybeans without talking China. Has the change in corn policy in China had an impact?
Yes. They were stockpiling a lot of corn, and they were paying a very high price for Chinese farmers to sell corn to the government. The government decided that's not the policy they want to pursue anymore, so trying to draw down on those stocks. But the problem in China is you never know how much is in stocks. It's in a couple of sacks in a guy's back room, so you don't know. And what's the condition of that corn? So a lot of people are a little bit suspicious that they have that many million tons of stored corn that's in good condition.
And then the GMO issue. That's still a part of our foreign trade, is it?
Yes, of course. It was just recently announced, I think it was Bunge and Cargill said they wouldn't take some Monsanto hybrids. It's an ongoing concern that just not going to go away anytime soon.
So as you hear from your clients on soybeansandcorn.com, what kind of advice are you giving now on what they should be doing, if anything, in the marketplace?
Well, I think the market's going to slowly move higher. It's not going to bolt higher unless we have a weather concern in the United States. Now, if we do have a weather concern, then it's going to be some very good markets this summer. But see, the problem is the timing of La Nina. It is coming a little bit sooner than anticipated, but it's going to be like June, July, and August. So we don't know if it's going to have an impact in the U.S. or not. But I tell everybody it will have an impact on South America. And in South America, La Nina gives you generally below trend line yields in both Brazil and Argentina. So it may or may not impact U.S., but it will impact South America. And South America is by far the bigger soybean producer. They make the soybean market. So La Nina would have a big impact down there, which would impact our markets, of course.
Dr. Mike, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. And you'll find Dr. Mike Cordonnier on his website, which is soybeansandcorn.com.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
I do want to continue the Mother's Day theme for a minute or so, because a lot of moms will be receiving flowers, particularly roses, for this Mother's Day weekend. And it's more than likely that those roses will have come from Colombia in South America. Colombia is the largest supplier of flowers to Canada and the United States, with more than 80% of its flower production coming to these two countries. And the floriculture sector is a substantial contributor to the Colombian economy. Last year, the country exported $1.2 billion worth of flowers, mainly to the U.S., Canada, United Kingdom, Japan, and Russia. Canada and the U.S. alone import more than 173,000 tons of flowers, representing a value of $40 million. Colombia, the largest supplier of fresh-cut roses for the U.S. and Canada, chances are that 7 of the 10 of each 10 roses given this Mother's Day weekend will have been grown in Colombia. The weather this early in the season isn't conducive to producing a lot of flowers, particularly roses here in North America. So once again, proves the importance of trade, because we trade with Colombia. We sell them a lot of agricultural product, but they come right back at us with something that we can enjoy, particularly moms, on this weekend. So let's turn to the agricultural market activity this week, because as you heard Dr. Mike say earlier in the program, the weather situation in South America has had an impact indeed on U.S. markets, because when you go back to the planning intentions report at the end of March and saw the bearish news and the markets dropped sharply, a lot of people are saying what's happened, that those markets have come back. Well, they're coming back because there is concern in the global economy right now that soybean supplies could tighten. Soybeans led the gains today with the most active contract up 2.5%, and traders said hopes that the U.S. exporters will continue to pick up overseas demand even as harvest progresses in Argentina did help the soybean market again today. Corn futures also moving higher today, but there was some bargain buying in the market today after the Thursday decline. Now, the one story, of course, is the wheat crop. Prospects in Kansas well above average in as rains last month really more than offset the impact of an earlier drought. This past week, there were several wheat tours, the annual Kansas wheat tour, which gets the most attention. But in addition to that, there were wheat tours in Nebraska as well. And in the Kansas numbers that they issued, they're about 12 to 13 bushels an acre above a year ago. And with the acreage planted this year for the winter wheat harvest that'll be starting next month, that's going to add to the large supplies of wheat here in the U.S. and in the world. So on Monday, where do we start in the grain market? The grain market, after a higher close today, the May wheat contract will start at 4.53 and a quarter after gaining just half a cent today. The May corn contract will start at 3.76 after gaining 4.25 cents. And the new crop December corn contract will start Monday at $3.84 and three quarter cents after gaining 3 cents today. Soybeans will start Monday in the May contract at 10.26 and a quarter after gaining 26 and a quarter cents a bushel today. New crop November beans will start at $10.22 after gaining 22 and three quarter cents today. That soybean market really moving again, weather a factor. And as you heard Dr. Mike say, wet weather in Argentina and dry weather impacting the corn crop in Brazil. Turning to the livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange, 6 straight days of higher cattle prices, and the June contract will start at $120.87. The May feeder cattle contract will start at $147.70 a hundredweight, and May hogs will start at $76.75. Thank you for joining us. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.